Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive. Hello, Deep Divers. Do I have a treat for myself? June, our beloved June, is shooting today. And so we're trying something very different, which is we asked Danielle Schneider to come on and be June. I know she's going to be herself, but she'll be my co-host today, and we are going to get to have a long chat. Now, BB did ask if Aunt Danielle was going to pretend to be Aunt June, and would we, quote, tell the people listening? So I said, no, we're going to come as our authentic selves today. But welcome, Danielle, to The Deep Dive.
Oh, what a pleasure. You know, I love this podcast, and I love you guys. And honestly, this is such a treat because I miss my friend Jess. Like, Jess,
I mean,
and
I haven't seen your face. I'm going to start like literally sobbing.
I couldn't
be more homesick. I couldn't be more homesick for you specifically.
I know. I miss every weekend. Jess and I and Bibi and Sydney, our daughters, would hang out. And so for me not to have seen your face in like 2.5 months, I'm truly homesick for you. Like, I miss you.
Yes.
I miss Bibi. I miss our girls together. I miss us yelling at them and being like, leave us alone.
Leave us
alone. Mommies
are
talking.
It's like we don't. So just to take, and I think we probably covered some of this in your interview, Danielle, but we had our children 3 months apart, right?
Yes,
you had yours end of June. August,
end of
September.
July. Yeah, end of July.
Sorry, end of July. Then it was August, September, October, even though Sydney tells Bibi constantly that she is much, much
even,
older and
yes.
that Bibi wouldn't understand certain things until
yes.
she gets
even
the, her ripe
on
old
Bibi's
age.
Birthday message that Sydney left her because, you know, we weren't together on Bibi's birthday. And Sydney's like, Bibi, happy birthday. I love you. I miss you. I'm older than you by 2 months. She just never doesn't relish an opportunity.
She said, I'm glad you don't feel bad anymore. I hope you don't feel bad that I was older than you for 2 months. Yeah.
She's such
but
an
we've
asshole.
Been we have been parenting together
since day
literally
one.
Since they were born. And it is such a special thing to get to do that. And in the beginning, we really wanted to be with them. But now,
no.
parenting together means we get to hang out by the pool all day and they go and do their own thing. And that
yes.
is equally enjoyable as when they were babies.
Yes. And I feel very comfortable yelling at Bibi and you feel very
yes.
comfortable yelling at Sydney. And I like that sort of relationship because when I was growing up, like my mom's friends and parents' friends yelled at me and I appreciated that. I listened. So I like, you know.
Yes. That to me is like, that is closeness. Like
yeah.
When one of them is having a birthday and acting like a little capital
like a fool.
B.
Acting
to
a
like,
fool.
You know, opening up a present and then saying, don't anyone look at it. I don't want anyone to look at this new LOL. It's mine. But I'm opening it in front of you all.
Yes.
The other one can step in and say, we're not doing that.
No.
If you open up the LOL, everyone gets to touch
yes.
its hair.
And
I'm sorry. And
yeah.
if you don't, I'm taking the LOL away. And they're
yes.
just like, okay. Like they
yes.
accept your rule is as yeah. equal, if not better than mine.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And I need that in my life. I don't want to be precious. Like not just everyone can yell at my kid, but my close friends who are, you know, aunts to
That's right.
my child. I want you to. I always say, like, please yell at my kid so I don't have to today. So
yeah.
I love it. I want my friends to yell at my kid. That is a honor and a pleasure. And I want to yell at my friend's kid. And if you get mad at me for yelling at your kid, we're not friends.
That's right. We're not that close.
We're not that
close.
That's,
you know, June, she quantifies closeness by who is allowed to show up early to an event to your at your house. Like,
I show up early no matter what.
You are allowed to show up early at my house.
Thank you.
You and Lennon. And it like stops there.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't have a sister. Now you have a couple sisters. I don't have a sister. And so you are my sister. I've always felt that.
Yeah, me too.
And I felt we were truly, I have felt, and I felt feel this about all of my closest friends, but I do feel like you and I were, and we say this to each other often late at night on text, but I do feel like we were brought together to mother each other.
Yes.
That's truly, and full disclosure, like I have a migraine and I just took two pills from the British pharmacy and I'm not exactly totally sure what they are. But anyway, but yes, I do feel really strongly that we were brought together on this planet Earth in this journey to both be mothers together and to mother each other, because that is often how the role we fill for each other.
Oh, completely. And also to help, I mean, you mother me all the time. And I also feel like you help me mother my child, as we've said before. So not only are you helping to mother me, but you are helping to mother my child. We are in like a circle of mothers. You and I need mothering. We just do. You know, we do. And not in a way like, oh, sweetie, hun. Like it's more just like we're missing something and we need it. And so we help each other through that. And it's been invaluable in my life and has made me, I believe, a stronger mother to myself 100%. And to my child.
Well, the nice thing too, and I was thinking about the girls, they go through different phases at different times. So like, you know, rarely are they both acting like assholes at the same time. Mm-hmm. So like one of them will be in a competitive phase while the other one isn't. The next one will be in a drama phase where the other one isn't. And so you can kind of watch. I watch how you navigate Sydney during a phase that will then be coming for me.
Yeah.
You know, and
oh, it's coming.
And also like we are so exhausted that maybe one of us is reading up on something. Maybe. Yeah. And then they can just give us the cliff notes. Like right now, I'm deep into parenting research and I've got lots.
I need some because I am not. I am being a bad parent right now. But I also think I am learning that when I am not at my best, if I address it pretty quickly, then I am still an okay mom. You know what I mean? Like in my own mind. And I, you know, everybody has their own journey. But like last night, I was so hungry and I was in that phase where like I couldn't sit down. Like anytime I brought Sydney something, she would ask me for another and I never got to eat. You know what I mean? It's like I'm finally like sitting down, I'm feeding her, I'm doing things. And then I would like sit down to eat my own thing. And she would be like, Mommy, can I have this? And I just lost it on her because I was hungry.
Yeah, you were starving.
And my blood sugar was low, and that's not an excuse, but I was just like, Sydney, my God. And then, you know, I saw her face and I was like, okay, you know what? Mommy just needs to eat a little something. But you know what I mean? So it's like,
you just catch it.
You just catch it and just say
like. It's not about being perfect. It's about catching it when you have. I think I told, one of us told Bebe to suck it up. She's been complaining about something for so long and we'd validated for 400 hours this issue. And I think someone got upset and said, you know, I really need you just to suck it up. And that wasn't the right move. But then we were able to say like, we just got exhausted. We were exhausted all the time. And so
I didn't have that as a parent where like, my parents messed up all the time as all parents do. But then I think there was a thing in our parents' generation of like, you can't say you've messed up. It shows weakness. You don't, and it actually shows strength because I do think I showed my daughter like, you know, Mommy messes up sometimes and I'm going to apologize and I want her to be able to mess up and apologize and know that like, I still gotcha, but I'm not my best self every minute of every day. And so, you know.
And that's okay.
And that's parenting though. And I think I've learned a lot of that through you and through our conversations of like, you don't have to be perfect. You can make mistakes. You can screw up and then, you know, admit to the screw up. And that's part of the healing from the screw up. So
yeah, I read somewhere that parents, good parents, make the wrong decision 70% of the time. Literally, they do the wrong thing. And the 30%, what really matters is how they repair.
Yeah, it's a lot of repairing. Parenting is repairing.
So much repair. It's like the house is always falling down and you're constantly replacing a shingle.
Constantly. I need to call in a handyman to repair this shit.
Big time. Yeah, so anyway, that's the history of Danielle and I, and that is why I'm missing you so very much.
I miss
much.
You so much. And so this was, when you asked me to do this, I was like, I love the show, but also I just miss my friend, guys. I miss my friend.
I know. Here's the deal, guys. Like, you can go to as many, you know, haberdasheries as you can find, and it's charming as shit. But if you don't have your friends, you don't got nothing.
Yeah.
You don't really got nothing. And Dan told me, when I told him I was going to become a citizen of the UK, not more than a month ago, I was like, I think I'm going to put down roots here. He said, absolutely not. You will not survive without your friends. That's your water. That's your lifeblood. And I said, yeah, you know, I could really take them or leave them. And then here I am telling him, like, oh, we got to go. Like, I'm like marking it down on the wall. Like, I'm, you know,
a prisoner.
A prisoner of my own mind and heart. I got to get back to the girls.
Well, you are missed. You are very missed. And you are spoken of often. Not that I see anybody. I mean, we're still I'm still in my own quarantine here. Basically, I don't see many people.
Is that what adulthood is, though? Like, is adulthood just quarantine? Like, that goes on and on, where you just have to work and never see the people that you love?
I don't see anyone. I mean, I'm on a work Zoom many hours a day, and then my weekends I'm just at like soccer games with strangers.
Not here, though. I gotta tell you, like, you go out to dinner. If someone invites you to dinner, and listen, of course my social card is full here.
Of course, I wouldn't expect nothing less.
I'm fighting off invitations. you know, but the, like, if you get, say, yes to a dinner, you got to know that you are at that restaurant till midnight. Wow. You are not leaving that. I have
that
now
must be
stumbled
strange for
home.
You are not a person that stays out all night. How is that?
No,
for
but
you?
That's you just. Because my European self, we just go with it. You know, you come over for a roast dinner. You're there for 5 hours for lunch. Someone invited us for Sunday lunch. I thought we were going to be in and out in 45 minutes. I had booked two things on either side of it. We were there for 5 hours.
No, I would love that. You know, I'm a social person.
But it's great.
I need people. I mean, that's on some level another reason why this quarantine. Sydney is the same way. We need to be surrounded by people all of the time.
All of the time.
I need people around me. And so that's why this quarantine. But then I've gotten in the habit of not making plans for so long. And so it's like, I got to like get out of that place. But
Are people going out and being with the people yet there? Because that is one of the reasons why I said I was never going to leave here. Because here, as I've told you, they've said they're done with COVID. Mind you, I believe the cases are as high as they've ever been. Definitely the highest possibly in the world right now.
But, you know, I went to Salt Lake City last weekend.
What the fuck was that trip? What did you get procedures done?
No.
Were these Housewives of some show I won't watch?
Housewives related. Housewives. Casey took herself. We paid to do this. This was not.
Wait. So are there Housewives of Salt Lake City?
Yeah.
Are they all Mormons?
Some of them are.
I follow many, many Mormons.
And there's
on
one woman who's a Jewish woman that became a Mormon, which is I'm obsessed with because I'm like, really? That seems
That's
like a strange
wild.
Transition. But sure. Do you? But Casey and I took ourselves there, and while we were there, it was like, when in Salt Lake City, do as the Mormons.
What does that mean?
Well, we went out for dinner, which is something I never do here, and I sat like inside, and it was terrifying at first, but you sort of get used to it. Whereas here, I haven't had a dinner inside in a year and a half.
So like LA could not be a more different place than where I am sitting right now.
Yeah, and it's so when in LA, you do sort of feel scared still, or I do. I know other people are going out for dinner.
Yes.
But I am not. And I should get more used to it, but I'm scared, you know, and I'm vaccinated.
I don't know. I mean, listen, I don't know, because people are, you know, they're not dropping like flies. Like, they're not going to the hospital necessarily. Mm-hmm. But when I tell you it is every other day, somebody's got a breakthrough infection. I don't want to be a bummer on the podcast, but things could take a real turn here. They might already be taking a turn.
I'm still pretty locked down, but I'm jealous of a lifestyle where you're just going out for dinner at night.
Yeah.
And I need to start doing that outside, you know, because California, it's very,
We can live that. We can live that life. It's okay to, this is what London is teaching me, is it's okay to put your kids to bed and then go live your adult life. They all are like, got tickets to the theater or like, oh, I'm going to see traditional Greek music. And I'm like, what? Who the fuck does that? But Europeans are, they live their life. Like when we're shooting at 6:30 on the dot, we could be in the middle of a scene. I could be in the middle of a line and they're like, that's a wrap. And everyone goes home.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Can't even imagine that.
It's not even on their radar that we stay later.
I need to be living my life. And this is an inspiring thing to me. I need to get out. And it doesn't mean I have to risk myself, but I need to start making plans with people because I've been so locked down and used to it that I am working full time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've just gotten so used to not doing it that I have to get out of that cycle of not anything because I miss people.
I feel fed. I do feel fed by that.
I feel scary.
And also you're out on the street and you're like interacting and seeing things and seeing people in the way that New York was.
Yeah.
You feel that here.
I feel very isolated.
Well, you also are living in the woods where a bear comes and saw you while you're walking.
Yeah, I had an interaction with a bear, which was terrifying. And now I've taken to...
carrying what? You're already nervous. The thing that I love about this is if anyone was going to get an interaction with a wild animal, it would have been me because I would have been on my phone, not listening, not walking unaccompanied. But you are the last person.
I know. I'm a nervous person. And so I knew there was a bear hanging out in the hood. You know, I'd seen it on my Ring cam and that was terrifying.
Terrifying.
But I didn't think, you know, early morning, the lights are out. But I was on a walk, you know, early morning and I'd heard tell of a bear here, like I said. But then I'm walking my dog down a hill and I'm 20 feet away from this fucking thing.
It is big. How is it bigger than you?
Oh,
what is it?
Yes.
I haven't seen one, but like, was it a gigantic like mother bear? Was it?
Well, I didn't see a child. Thank God. Because then you really have to be fearful. But it was very, as I said, it was sort of apple bottomed. You know, like it was.
Like a big old caboose.
Thick. Yeah.
Like me. Thick. Like me. Unsurprisingly.
Thick. Thicker.
Yeah. Well, he's dining out on all of the garbage.
On all of our garbage. Lots of bread for this bear. And it was just like a big old bear. I don't think it saw me. And I did the exact thing you're not supposed to do, which is
ran away.
But okay. I've heard now with research that, you know, you're supposed to like make loud noise you're supposed to make.
Yeah.
Or people have bells and stuff like that.
As my mom, she has a coffee can of change.
Yes, that's what you're supposed to have. I have yet to make one of those, or beans, or something like
your
that.
Your beans,
like a kid, instrument. But what I have now taken to doing is playing my Band of Brothers podcast really loud.
What are you talking about?
On my phone.
First of all, why are you listening to the Band of Brothers soundtrack?
Podcast? Because it's a podcast. It's new, and they are interviewing all like the men that are in Band of Brothers, and like who wrote. I mean, it's amazing for anyone who's into World War II history. This is
incredible. I thought you were playing like the song that was playing when one of them holds the other one while they bleed out. Like,
no,
the actual...
but I would listen to that any day of the week too. And that music does accompany it sometimes. So I'm playing my Band of Brothers podcast really loud, and I walk down the hill going like this. Ooh, 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 ooh.
God, what you do all of this when all you need is a handful of pinto beans and an old can.
No, I go like I'm at a disco. And then Matt was like, well, my husband Matt was like, well, aren't they gonna think you're like a bird?
Like a tasty treat.
Yeah.
Listen, you are so sinewy, you're so you're such a slight woman that I feel like if I'm a bear, honestly, first of all, I don't know if they eat meat. I don't think they want
do.
Human
I think
meat.
They eat meat.
They don't want a human. There's not a they're not going to come for you.
They're not see me as a treat, but they'll see me as a threat, maybe.
Why would they? Because you're going,
because I'm at a disco making sounds going,
but if I see you, but if I'm seeing you, I'm saying like, I'm going to pass because I don't feel like, honestly, well, if I was going to eat somebody, if I was going to eat somebody, it wouldn't be you. You're going to be a tough
meat. They
might
not have a choice. I might be the only game in town.
They don't want you. Now, see, the difference between you and I is you ran. I would have stayed and I probably would have tried to interact with it.
Why, Jessica? You're not supposed to interact.
Just to like, see. Just to see what would happen. I would have at least frozen just to see what's going to happen.
No, I ran like the Dickens. I ran.
That's the difference between you and I.
You are crazy.
We were in this place, the New Forest, which is like in England. And now I'm going to tell this story and all these British people are going to be like, what the fuck were you doing? But it's basically William the Conqueror's hunting lands.
Ooh, okay.
And it's this beautiful forest and they have 3,000 wild ponies. They just live there.
Baby
they're
must
owned,
have been loving that.
Exactly. I thought this will be magical. But what I imagined was, you know, a pony coming up and laying its head on my lap. You know, that Jessica. Kind of, I needed to feel that. I needed to interact with it. Now, they're not fully wild. They are owned by people, but they don't ever go inside. And they just go, so you walk down the road in a town and there's a bunch of ponies. They're everywhere.
Okay.
But immediately upon arriving, I was like, can we go to a Tesco? I have to get some water. And Dan was like, okay, I guess. And what I really was after was a bag of carrots.
Oh, you wanted to bribe the ponies to sit their heads in your lap.
Well, there were gigantic signs everywhere that said, do not, under any circumstance, feed these ponies. They
you
are
don't
wild.
Abide
they
by
are
rules.
Unpredictable.
Yes.
But I said, what's interesting about just standing here and looking at them? And
it's
you know,
not about you.
I said, I want to get involved. And I said, I'm not feeding them a Mars bar. I'm just going to give them a
They're not telling
treat.
You just feed them healthy snacks. They're saying don't feed them. It's not about their diet. It's about interaction.
So I see some beautiful ponies and Bibi, who I really feel like sometimes... I really feel like we have the wrong child sometimes because Sydney and I live on the edge
in a way.
Bibi is becoming more like you as she gets older.
Which is
like
a rule follower.
Yeah, like if I buy a sparkling water, she's like, don't open that until we pay for it. Like,
and that is
out.
Me.
Right. So she can read now. Thank God. God save the queen. It's all the British people's doing. She can read now. And she was like, I am reading the sciences. Do not under any circumstance feed these ponies. I said, Bibi, relax. I'm your mother. Have I ever put you in harm's way? She's like, yes.
Yes.
Just got
many
three
time.
Flat tires. You know, the first day
you
of driving,
rode,
like, I don't trust
you. You rode her on a bike through like Santa Monica traffic, but she was just
not just Santa Monica traffic. I crossed the PCH.
You sure fucking
with her
did.
On the back of my bike.
And I was like, this is crazy.
I misjudged with the turnoff is what I'm saying. I went down an exit ramp with a child
you.
On the back
I
of my
bike. I watched that whole thing and I said, this is a woman that doesn't care.
Follow rules. But anyway, so. The first carrot went okay. They were tentative, but I guess carrots are like ice cream to horses.
Yeah,
they taste very sweet.
Yes, yes.
And they're in these wild packs. There are leaders of the pack, okay? The biggest one is the leader. Mm. And when he got wind, of course it's a man, when he got wind of there were some carrots on the site, he went fucking bananas. First of all, went bananas on the horse that I was feeding and started coming towards me. I was like, okay, like, let me just give it a carrot and it'll just chill the fuck out. Well, no, it started really coming at us fast and we were chased.
Yes,
by
Jessica, you
not
were.
Not one, but the entire pack of ponies. Now, I ask you this. Do you think I did it again?
Yeah, of course you did, because you never learned your lesson.
I did it again like five different times. And each time it got worse and worse. Each time it got more and more dangerous. And, you know, listen, this is, you're not supposed to do it. I don't suggest it. Would I do it again? Of course
yes,
I would.
Yes, you will.
I kept thinking, you know, maybe like in spirit, the, you know, that horse cartoon that the girls watch, Spirit Riding Free. I thought maybe there'll be one that connects with me, you know, and that we
go to a farm and connect with another horse that and not get
the same. It's not the same unless you have to work for it.
Chess, no.
Just like in dating, you know, if there's a man that
I
you feel like
I did like to work
break.
For a man. I am under the Mr. Darcy spell of you got to work for that man. That has always been my way. So I'll work for a man, but I'm not working for an animal. Nope, 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 nope.
But I did make you come to the gentle barn. Remember that?
Yes, and that was a mess as well.
I'm going to explain to everybody what the gentle barn is, and then we'll move on from livestock, because I actually really want to dig deep into your World War II obsession.
Yes.
Okay, so when I was going through chemo, I would decide, I decided, you called me and you said, listen, I want to do something. I want to do what you need me to do for you, which I really, really think is so important. And we had Julia Louis-Dreyfus on and we were talking about how to best show up for your friend. Mm-hmm. And this is the way to do it. So you called in. Well, caveat. A lot of people don't feel comfortable telling their friend what to do for them. So sometimes you just, if you have a friend like that, you sometimes just have to do it.
Well, sometimes I would just show up because I do think back then, you're not as much now. I think, you know, the big C sort of changed your life as well as everyone surrounding you. But I do think sometimes I would just, you would say, no, I'm fine. I got this. And I would then just show up with like a huge thing of soup and just be like, I'm trying something here.
Or I would say, oh, I'm going to go to this appointment alone. I did a lot of like bravado, like, oh, don't mind. Oh, no, I'm fine. I'll go to this checkup alone. And you were like, what? No. And then you would take notes. That was funny. That one time you went with me, you took notes and you're really good at shorthand. Like if you ever have to become a paralegal or do like court.
I got that in the can.
Stenographer, you got that in the can. Mm-hmm. And so you took all these very, very detailed notes. And then I would do the same thing. Every time I would leave the appointment, I would say, well, I guess it's doomsday.
No, we got to start. Like, Jess, you did not hear what she said. Because you would be like, she said, oh, this is the survival rate. And I was like, No.
Refer to this court sealed document. Like, that is not what she said. So that's actually a really, really good tip is do not go to appointments alone because you can't hear them.
Well,
you cannot hear them.
Yeah. And sometimes also what you would do is you would record. If you didn't want anything, you would record theirs and I would listen to them like a podcast.
You
like,
wouldn't take notes. And I would then call notes. You and I go, did you
what
hear?
What did she say?
Did you see, hear the appointment? Every, I'm going to die. And you'd be like, nope, that is not what she said. And I quote. And you would like read out a quote like, you know, that you'd take it.
I would take notes.
That's really a friend who will listen to an hour and 15 minute like physical exam where there was probably a lot of silence and like rustling of fabrics. And you would just listen
I
to
really
it.
Got
that is
to
a good
know
friend.
Some of your doctors, just even through their voice. I was very attracted to many of their voices.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're all so good looking. But anyway, so I said to you, you said, what can I do for you during this time? And I said, I don't ever want to be alone with my child, not even one second of the day. I don't want to be alone with them because it was too hard. I didn't feel well, but also I was terrified. And if you have someone with you, could really pretend kind of like everything was normal.
Yeah. And you can distract and kind of like not think about what's going on for a minute.
That's right. And that's when we started our tour of every single museum in Los Angeles.
God.
And we got there opening minute. We would get there the moment it opened. We would be there before the crowds and like out by noon. Yeah. But the one thing I did say to everyone, and the great thing about when you have cancer is if you tell someone to do something, they do it.
They like, can't say no.
Nobody says no.
One time I had food poisoning and I was like, we got to go.
And I never told me. And you never told me. You just
I was
like
throwing up all morning. And then Sydney, one point, said, was like, mommy threw up this morning. I was like, I'm fine.
No, I didn't care. But yeah, you cannot ever cancel on somebody who's got cancer.
No, no, no.
So I got it in my head that we were all going to go to this place called the Gentle Barn. And this is a place that rescues. It's a beautiful place. It's one of the most special places, honestly, I've ever been, but it's not for everybody.
No.
But it is a place where they rescue animals, farm animals, a lot of them right before they're about to be killed, or let's say a horse that's being used in, you know, films and not treated well or whatever. Mm-hmm. They rescue these places and then they get to live out their days in the gentle barn. And there's a cow. I mean, some of the animals are
a horse you can feed legally.
Exactly. A horse is just so glad that you're not, you know, doing bad things to it. So yes, you can feed these horses and be with them. And they have, the other thing that I thought was so beautiful, I don't even remember this, Danielle, is they have docents. You know, every yes. animal has somebody with them. And a lot of the docents were teenagers that were on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And they, for some reason, being with an animal and explaining to us how the animal wants, is comfortable being pet or be, or touched or talked to, made them come out of their shell and yeah. be able to communicate really clearly and confidently. And that was, I mean, that shit will have you crying all day long. So anyway, Gentle Barn, amazing. But what was totally fucked up is then we take, oh, and June shows up and doesn't tell us that she's a fear of farm animals.
No,
she like
does
she
not.
Has a phobia.
But she was like, my friend has asked me to come here today. My friend has.
Yeah. Cancer, so like, I right. remember being where all of the turkeys are that had been saved right before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of them just like one wing, half a wing, yeah. one and a half wings.
And June, also, I'm not a big bird person either.
That's so. Right. You might not be a bird person, but June looked so upset. And I was yeah. like, oh, I said, are you upset because these turkeys, like, you know, only have one wing? And she was like, no, I have a phobia, like a just severe phobia of farm animals. So this is a real stretch for me. And that was like, that was really, it was nice
no
to see how far people will go
there.
For you.
Yeah. No one wanted
it. Nobody wanted it. It was also no. a very long drive to get there
yeah.
into the mountains.
And you know, nobody wanted to be there, but we, you know, we ended up enjoying ourselves.
Nobody wanted.
No. Of course not. But we did it.
And then why don't you tell everybody what you ate for lunch?
What did I?
So they were very specifically mm-hmm. say no meat is to be eaten at this place.
Well, and I brought myself a big old turkey sandwich.
A big old turkey sandwich.
So I was like, if I'm going to the Gentle Barn, I'm going to eat what I eat.
And so you everyone brought out your turkey and cheese. Anyway, that was just.
Yeah. And I had no problem. I felt no guilt. I disassociate very easily. When
you really do. We also had lunch in the Hall of North American Animals, like sitting on one of those dioramas.
Yes. They were literally like, there's no eating in this hallway. And Jess is like, we can eat. You know, Jess doesn't follow rules. And so Jess is always telling me to break the rules. It's like, we can eat here. And then someone comes by and they're like, you can't eat here.
We can't eat here.
And then Jess plays stupid. We didn't see the sign.
Right. And then I like get annoyed by the person. Like, yeah. Oh, check out, you know, that person's small teeth. Okay. But anyway, so she's the best friend in the world. But that is something to do is a lot of times people going through, moms especially going through yes. cancer, they're never going to ever want to be alone or with their children by themselves. So that's yeah. something that you can do for them. Tell me about this, Danielle. You okay. have long had an obsession with World War II.
Yes, I have.
And I want to understand. Well, first of all, I know you have a theory about when you meet people.
Yes. And I think it stems back. You know, it's so funny that you say this because I just had something with my daughter where I explained a little bit of World War II and the Holocaust to her recently,
whoa,
which I have
yes.
not. And she doesn't know it totally, but I'm Jewish. And it is, you know, important that we know this
yeah.
and never forget it. But also with children, you don't want to scar them for life because it's
that's
so
just,
evil and
wow.
so terrifying. So it's like, how do we roll this out? You know what I mean? Like, you know, she's learning so much. You know, they're 8 now, so they are learning about civil rights and slavery and you know,
yeah.
the history, the terrible history of this country and many countries. And they are learning about them and they're taking it in. But she asked me if they're, you know, she knows we're Jewish and she's asking me if there's bad things that happen to Jewish people. And we were literally like, I was taking a shower with her.
Wow.
It was a weird time. Like, I was just trying to, like, get her, you know, scrubbed up after soccer.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, and I had just also given her the sex talk the week before. So
oh my God, you've like, already done that?
Well, I've heard that you're supposed
to. Oh my God, I'm not ready for that.
Well, that was its own thing. Oh, Jen.
Oh,
that was,
God.
That was and I talked about this on Bitch Sesh podcast.
Oh,
for your listeners. But
no, I'll be listening to that.
That was its own thing. But then a week later, I get the 1-2 punch of sex and the Holocaust. Like,
oh my God, life and death. That is fucking tough.
But I'm trying to answer questions in a way that, you know, you don't tell them more than they need to know, but you still try to answer questions. Because yeah. I think I was told about the Holocaust very early. I think in my generation, we weren't that far away from the Holocaust. So like in the 80s, you know, like,
People had grandparents, right?
Who had survived it or didn't. You know what I mean? Family members. So it was a little more close to my generation in the sense that like their grandparents had gone through it, you know,
yes.
in one way or another,
yes.
or family members had died. And so it was talked about very openly. And I remember not understanding everything, but I remember hearing that Jews were gassed and things like that. And
oh
not
God.
Understanding that completely. Like I was just like, I remember thinking like, were they in like a room where gasoline was poured. Like, I just couldn't get it. But
oh my God.
Early. Like,
And
it scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
And so I always tell Jess now that, like, you know, and maybe it was Hebrew school. I'm not sure where I learned.
That's what I was wondering. Because I know that for me, I didn't learn about the Holocaust until very much, much too later.
I don't remember not knowing about it.
That's right. Because I think when you go to Hebrew school, that starts to roll out really early. I mean, I understand that's a huge part of
the
Jewish
history. Never again. You know, we always say never again. And so to learn it, to know it, to see it. And I saw images, terrible images too early.
Yes. Yes.
But so it scarred me. And so it has always sort of lived in my being, you know, like, I've always been sort of very interested in that time period. And there's so much evil that I also look for the good and the heroes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think that's why I'm very interested in the heroes, the resistance fighters and the soldiers that fought against the Nazis. You know what I mean? So the dark was introduced to me. So I'm also very interested in the light. You know what I mean? And the heroes. So from a very young age, I was always interested in movies about World War II, even like really old movies, you know, from like the 50s and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I read Anne Frank very early. You know what I mean? Like these were things that just, it left such a lasting impression on me. Oh, but so when Sydney asked, God, it was like a week or two ago, she was like, has anything like that happened to Jews? And I said, actually, yes. I said, yes. I said, a long time ago, during World War II, I said, in Europe, there was this bad man named Hitler. And he was, you know, he had basically people that followed him called the Nazis. And they blamed the Jewish people for all their problems. And I said, and they didn't like Jewish people, and they didn't like basically anyone who wasn't white. They didn't like gay people. I said, they just thought anyone who didn't look and act exactly like they did were wrong. And what they did was they imprisoned those people and they killed many of them.
Oh my God.
And I just kind of said it like that. And I said, and that's why, and then I turn it around real quick.
Yeah, that's the right thing to do.
I said, and that's why we make it our priority to always stand up for people, because we know that everybody is the same inside and it doesn't matter if they're differences. Differences are good.
Yeah.
And we stick up for people that if anyone is saying that I don't like you or you're not right or I don't like the way you did this or you're weird, we stick up for those people because we don't want ever to happen again. So anyway, that was a weird talk. I hadn't had it.
That's
yet,
you handled, by the way, you handled that.
It was just
beautifully,
it came up,
Danielle.
So like, but I was like, well, now is the time. You know, now I do.
No, you told the truth. You told the truth, but not details that will haunt her.
Yeah.
No, like because we've all been, you know, told some things too soon or just details too soon.
I'm trying not to. But it was a 1-2 punch of like sex and the Holocaust. Jesus fucking Christ, Sydney. Killing me here.
Yeah.
But I, again, learned too early. So I think I've always looked for people, I don't know, since I was a kid, like where could I hide? God forbid if this happens again. Or who will hide me? Like, I know, and it's not a way to live
That's
your life,
so
but it's almost
crazy.
Like tethering myself to the ground before, you know, it's like looking for an escape route.
No, I've, I really think the who would hide me is such a good way to judge your friends and the people that you are. I'm serious. No, I don't make light of it either. Like, I'm saying, like, who would risk their life for you? Now, not everyone has to hide you that's in your life. No. They don't, because we don't need everybody
to. We have friends for different reasons. But, you know, like, every friend is a different reason. But I do, like, I'm looking for looking for an emergency, like, when I get on a plane, I also look at my emergency exits. I just do.
And I don't know where they are.
And I always look and I count.
I figure I'm going to know people are going to lead me there.
I count seats to each emergency exit, so I know.
That's insane. That's truly crazy.
I know. This is who I am.
That's crazy.
But it's the same thing. I look at people and I say, would they hide me? Would they hide my family?
And that's how you decide, is this somebody who's trustworthy or someone you can trust your secrets with or are worth your friendship?
Well,
or what
many
do you
friends
mean?
And you know where you stand with your friends, and friends are all there for different reasons. But your truest, your nearest, your dearest, you're saying, yeah, would this person hide me? Would this person help me? And that is how I look at my friends, and I used to tell Jess, I don't think you'd hide me. We would joke, but I know that Jess would. But Jess would, as we said.
I told you, I'm not going to listen to me. Okay. We're going to have to cut this out. What I said was, yes, I would hide you. You would be in my house, but I would also, try to make the other side think I was on their side so I can get the rations. Yeah. Here's what you're going to come to me for. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to hide you. Okay. I'm going to treat you well. I'm going to make sure you've got a lot of meals coming down. Okay. But what I'm also going to do is I'm going to figure out who's the person to get those papers. You know I'm going to get those papers for you faster than
you're
anybody.
Get me out of the country, and I'm really going to appreciate that.
I'm going to get you out of the... I might have to throw a few parties, I may have to hobnob with some despicable people, but I am
doing it for the right reasons. And a lot of people in the resistance, Jess and I always talk about writing a movie about the resistance because...
We are going to. I was just thinking, as we have to, we must.
Because we both love to read and talk about those periods. And we have done a bunch of research about those women. So, I mean, men and women, but there were so many women involved in it. And so I guess that, it comes down to like wanting to feel safe all the time. And this history that I know exists and is still happening in other countries, where they do sort of ethnic cleansing in a really scary way. And so it does happen, not to make this podcast so dark, because I love this podcast and I know it's a very feel-good podcast, but I'm saying...
No, this is really important. Like, you are not afraid of the dark.
Well, I am afraid of the dark, but I'm looking for the light in the dark. You know what I mean? It's like, I am always going like...
You are a very... I was saying to you earlier that we would talk a little bit about resilience, because I was thinking about you... And you are one of my most resilient friends. It doesn't mean that you don't get knocked down, because God knows we have been knocked down for various reasons, personally, professionally, but you don't stay down long.
No, I'm looking for
I would say you've got 12 to 24 hours.
I always say
hours.
That I have 24
maybe,
hours or something.
Maybe 24. I think by 12, you start to hear,
and then I start my bear call.
Okay, getting stronger. But tell me, Danielle, like, how do you summon that resilience? What do you, first of all, where do you think it comes from? Why did you become a resilient person? And
it's come with age. It's come with age.
Yeah.
Maybe I've always been resilient. I do think... I want to go for things. You know what I mean? I want to move forward with things, and you're going to get your heart broken. So I realized that the heartbreak comes with the trying. And so the more I try things, the less heartbreak matters. You know what I'm saying? Like, the more you put yourself out there to get your heart broken, the heart breaks less, because it develops like scar tissue or something. You know what I mean? So I think I've become less afraid, and maybe with age of just, but like putting myself out there. And also what I do to not get my heart broken as much is to have a lot of irons in my fire, whether it's with friends, whether it's with projects, whether it's with life experiences, I try and keep so many irons in my fire that if something doesn't work out, it's not going to kill me all the way. It's going to be tough, but I know that I have other things going on that fill my life. So if a friend has broken my heart, I'm like, God, I really love that person. They really broke my heart, you know, but I do have these other friends that treat me so well that I'm going to be okay. Or this project, I've put my heart and my soul in, and I love it so much, and it's not going to happen. But I have these other projects that I know also make me happy. Like, I really try and keep it full. And I think that helps with resilience for me. It's like this back. That's again, it's the escape window. I'm always looking for the escape route.
You have an escape window. No, and you know, I'm very different in that way. And that, you know me, yes. I like focus on one thing. And then I like, and that's been really hard for me, because when that one thing doesn't work out, I can be like,
my life to fall apart if one thing doesn't work out. I say that to, like, I'm like, if this, like, I'll put my heart in it, but there's always a part of me that has one foot in something else. Because I don't, and so I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's how I keep resilient. It's how I can wake up in 12 hours. And you know, I had some really bad stuff going on with my family, and it was breaking my heart. And obviously, that's the hardest when it's like, you know, that is, you know, it's not about a friend or a job.
Like,
it's just really heartbreaking family stuff. And we got some bad news, and I was so upset, and I let myself mourn, but I was like, there's this project I'm really excited about. I'm going to spend the day thinking about that project.
Yes, that's the one that's the day I was like, Jesus, nothing is going to keep her down. Because I was like, you know, me and Casey were texting like, okay, we are in DEFCON 10. We need to summon the troops. I was like, do I need to fly back there? What do we need to do? And then the next day, you're like already working on something.
Yeah, I said to Casey, I was like, okay, I have the outline of this project I'm thinking. She's like, what?
It isn't like, I never worry about the fact that you're in denial or that you're not dealing.
No, I'm in therapy. I'm in therapy. I'm in antidepressants. I cry. It's not that I don't feel the pain, but it depends. Sometimes the pain will floor me and I will literally not get out of bed. You know, there are days that I have to take to bed. And those are, but I let my body and my mind tell me what I need to do for that resilience. So sometimes my body says, stand under the sheets today.
And you don't worry. Do you ever worry that, I remember saying to my therapist, like, I don't want to start crying because I'm worried I'll never stop. And she's like, has that ever happened? Have you ever cried for 100 hours? I'm like, no, but I'm just worried if I ever let myself go to the full dark place. But you don't worry if you stay in that bed. You don't worry. Has your brain showed you enough times that you get up?
Yeah,
that
I'm you're old not enough worried? Now yeah. that I have the experience of having life. Like, I've experienced really bad things and I've lived through them. You know what I mean? And I'm sure people have bigger and harder problems than I do. So I don't want to say like, I know everything. Everyone has their tale of woe, as my dad says. Right. But I've, you know, once you've hit 40, you've lived through some shit. You're lucky if you haven't.
Yeah.
And I've been through it and I've come out the other side and I've gotten out of bed. So I trust that I will get out of bed. And I have a support system of amazing friends that have carried me and lifted me and also let me stay in bed for a day and then also come by with food and whatever it needs. So the resilience doesn't come just from me. The resilience comes from my support system and my history. And you know what I mean? I haven't met a challenge that hasn't killed me. You know what I mean?
That's right. No. If this ain't killed me yet, then. And the other thing that I really, just find so inspiring about you is like, you have a conviction in your art. Like if you have an idea and that is so good that, and let's say you make the rounds and people say no, thank you.
No, thank you many times again.
No, like 10 people. I mean, Lennon and I have had that. 10 people say no, thank you. Now it's not easy for anybody to know that deep down inside, like, no, you're not right. I think also for me, especially, I'm like, oh God, I'm always feeling a little bit like a fraud, a little bit like somebody gonna find out.
If you're an artist and you don't feel like a fraud every day, then I don't know. Then I don't know you.
I don't want to know you. I have never not feeling like a fraud,
but some projects, and I've talked, and Jessica, you've also been such a great sounding board for me on so many of my projects. And again, a support system is everything. I have had projects where I've been told no a million times. And you're just like, I believe in this project. I know what it is. And believe me, you and I have gone through projects, and you also know when a project has run its course. There are things that have run their course, and you're like, and then you also know when to give up the ghost. You know what I mean? You're like, okay.
Well, I'll never give up my house. You know, I keep saying every 6 months, I'm like, that was something special. Come for another season.
That was something special.
I know, but that is one that I have a hard time releasing my little talents from. But I mean, Lennon literally is like, you never give up. You never given up this dream. I'm like, no. I mean, we'll be 85 years
and
old.
And that's okay, and then too. But also that passion might take Playing House and take it to another place that you didn't even know that it was going to go.
Of course.
But I will say that, like, I have projects that I love. And then I was just like, it's run its course. Like, you gut check yourself, too. I do think that we have been through this a long time. So we gut check when something's over and when something's not. For me personally, I can gut check and... You know, certain projects have been like, everyone said no, but I don't believe it yet. And so I'm going to go in through a window because I couldn't get in through that door.
That's what you do. You have found those exits, but also the windows in, and you go in another fucking way. And it works.
You have to believe in that thing. It's not, you have to realize like when it's ego and when it's, you know, like I said, I do think we gut check. And I think in your 40s, especially, and hopefully some of you guys in your 30s and 20s have it. I did not. But in my 40s, do have a better, you know, kind of like system where I can gut check a little more and be like, is this over? I don't think it is. I gotta just give it another chance. Or you say, this is not making me happy anymore. I've given my all to it. I tried everything. Let go of the ghost so that I can welcome something new in. The thing I have waiting new in the wing.
Right.
The thing I have waiting in the wings.
Right. Which is like 16 things, apparently. I got nothing. I opened that door. Ain't nobody standing there. But I am trying to be more like you. Yeah. I guess my question is like, how do you push through that fear that you are not right, that you may, but you feel it, you're like, oh no, this is a really good thing and I gotta not give up, but then that fear creeps in that goes like, but what if it is bad? How do you, like, what if secretly that's why everyone said no, is it's no good? How do you then keep yourself going?
I think you start to think about the project. If this is project based or like, you know, like work based, you go, I know this is right. Like, I know I feel something about this job, this thing, this idea. You say to yourself, like, I believe in this. What's another way I can do this? You know what I mean? You try and look a way of like, I love this so much. Do I say it's like a project? You know, like, I really want to make these chairs. No one's buying them. Okay, well, what do I love about these chairs that I'm making? Like, what was my heart? Okay, well, maybe... It wasn't doing it the professional way. Like, I couldn't get a company to buy it, but let's see how popular it is on Etsy. Or, you know what I mean? Like, you just have to.
Right.
I still believe in this thing. I want to keep doing it. Find another way in. If you really believe in it, you have to look at it and just see, how can I do it in another way that still is true to myself and true to what I love about it?
You have to love it. I think that's the other thing. You have to love it. If you truly love something, I think that is your key. You know, I'm thinking of any deep divers out there that are listening that are like, oh, I have this idea for something and I'm scared to do it because I just live in a perpetual state of fear. If you fucking love it, if you love it, it will find its way out.
But you have to do it.
Because
you have to do it.
You have to do it. You have to do it. But I will tell you that if you deep down inside love it so much that you know that when it gets out into the world, people are going to love it too, keep going.
You have to love it for
you. That to me means that that is one of your soul's missions is to get
it
out there.
The things that I've loved the most.
It needs to exist.
Are the ones that I would do even if I wasn't paid, do even if it wasn't popular, do even if it was just me and five friends. Like, I think Bitch Sesh is like that. It came from a true place of interest and love and having fun. And then it became something people listened to. But we would be right. doing it even if we were just doing it for five people in a room. We would be, for sure. And so
then that's
you have
a, yes.
to love yes. it even if no one loves it. You know what I mean?
Love it even if no one loves it. That's a t-shirt.
You do. Otherwise, you're not going to spend the time and the energy it takes to build it. But and you have to walk past the fear. You have to like put it to paper, write it down, whatever it is. Because believe me, sometimes I have such a good idea. It's all in my head, but I'm scared because I just don't think it's good enough. And so just you have to push past it and let it be bad for a while, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be really, really bad
for a while. It's going to look really ugly for a while.
But you have to push past that if you ever want it to. To become
something. The other thing that I always use to push past my fear is I say, I never want to live with regret.
You're going to die with no regrets, Jessica St. Clair, because I don't go for it.
Yeah.
Even if the rules say no, you go for it.
If you want to feed that pony, feed that pony. No, don't feed the pony. I'm serious. That was a huge, huge mistake.
But I feel like through mistakes, you have found your best discoveries. Jessica's, I mean, that's just always
not
pushes
one,
me past my,
not that one.
Past my safe zone. And I appreciate that.
That's true. But if you, I really feel like if you say to yourself, am I going to regret if I don't try this one more time? Am I going to regret this? Then do it. Because the regret is always worse than the saying no or the fail. Like I always thought, God, I'm so afraid to move to Los Angeles, but I'll regret it if I don't give this a fucking shot. And I don't want to be one of those people that sits around regretting. That's for the birds. Okay, Danielle, this is the time where June would say, we need to wrap this up. And then I would scream at her, no, you're ruining this podcast. I want to be with my friend, I'm the parent here.
And I get to be the child.
And I need to say that we need to leave.
I love you and I miss you. And you've created such a wonderful community of deep divers, great people. And I love that all the pictures that you guys are posting lately of yourself as a child or yourself in sports, all that stuff is so great. As I raise a child too, I love seeing pictures of all these young, cute, strong, sporty women that I'm trying to raise myself.
I know. I love those pictures. I was eating
them up. I love it. And it's so inspirational to me to see them, you know, as I raise one of my own. I love seeing these strong, happy, confident little girls. It's such a treat.
And in some ways, you spend your whole life getting back to that little girl. You do. And I feel like I'm back there and I'm so fucking happy I'm back.
Yeah. So thank you for having me on and thank you all for listening. You know, I'm just talking shit. Listen, don't.
I would love for everyone to do a little inventory on the people in their lives.
We'll be there for you when the shit hits the fan.
Who's your emergency exit? That's right. I want to know who is your emergency exit. So I want you to tag them, have them listen to this, to the podcast, because I think knowing who it is important, but also telling them that there are your emergency exit is important, because that is such a beautiful thing to know. You know, listen, if you want somebody to hide you, you got to hide somebody first. Do you know what I'm saying? It's important. All right. Love you, Danielle. Deep divers. We will see you next week.
Thank you. And
bye.
Bye.
Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep. Let's go on the deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support the show is to rate and review. And a huge thank you to Anne Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to annegeddesbaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more.
We'll see you next time.